Welcome to Federal Insights for February, sponsored by Anomaly.
The intelligence community collects and shares information from a multitude of sources. Threat intelligence extends to both physical and cyber threats, including to the very networks and computers the community itself uses. For insight into cyber threat intelligence, I spoke with Linnea Jones, the Deputy Chief Information Officer of the intelligence community.
Cyber threat intelligence originates from multiple places. It could be from one of the agencies within the community, or it could be from one of our centers, which propagates the information out. I'd like to highlight one of our cyber centers, which is the Security Coordination Center, which is actually charged with propagating out threat intelligence, malware incidents, so that the community is better postured to support the threat.
So that's kind of like a cross-cutting agency or center that serves the entire IC.
Absolutely. It's an overarching coordination center. So they work with all of the agencies to coordinate threats, to work on malware signatures, to prevent attacks and threats, to ensure that everyone has the same information from a threat posturing and a security perspective. They coordinate whether it be general information or upcoming or anything that came out. They really are charged with ensuring that everyone is aware and tracking and knows of the most current status, information, mitigation techniques, and everything that's included with that.
Now, is this mainly a research type of agency, or is it something that is operationally connected? That is to say, it's right on top of what's going on in the internet at this moment, for example, and it's live.
Right. I would say it's the latter. Although they do provide research and analytics within the Security Coordination Center, they are an operational center. So how the Security Coordination Center came about was about 5 years ago, we used to have what was called the ICIRC, and that was the Incident Response Center. And 5 years ago, they decided that we wanted more than just instant response. We wanted to be able to posture, to coordinate mitigations, shared services, infrastructure. And so the ICIRC was expanded in order to create the Security Coordination Center, which is the SCC. So the SCC actually sits within the ICCIO office, my organization, or our organization, and they work with the community via that means. And that does sit within ODNI, the Office of Director of National Intelligence.
Now, the intelligence community, of course, is always a target for cyber hackers and thieves and so forth, as is the rest of the federal government. How tied in is your response center, or your investigative center, I guess I should call it, with all of the other types of data gathering operations throughout the government, including Homeland Security?
So they are tied in directly with the intelligence community, the 17 agencies, as well as with FedCiv and other departments of the government. They even coordinate. We have planning and training exercises that they do work with FEMA, as well as DHS has what they call their cyber storm. So we also coordinate like exercises and sharing information, but they are primarily coordinated with the IC elements and the agencies. So they directly work with the computer security organizations. In most cases, you could say the CISOs, the computer incident security officers at each of the agencies, but they also work with their cyber divisions and elements that manage those type of incidences as well as occurrences that go on.
Sure. And so give us a sense of the amount of data and the form of data this all generates.
Well, I would say quickly the amount of data is a lot because you're looking at multiple domains, multiple networks and fabrics. And so whereas the intelligence community is primarily on the classified networks, the threat intelligence is also propagated to the lower classifications as well. So there's the multi-fabric aspect of it and ensuring that data and information is passed through cross-domain guards and utilities to move from one area to the next.
I imagine if something is threatening to the classified environment, it's really, really bad for everybody else.
Absolutely. would like to also highlight not only that piece, but they also work with, say, vendors and our industry partners and service providers to ensure that that's coordinated as well. As a service provider for coordination, they have to work with all of the elements to ensure we're on the same page.
We're speaking with Linnea Jones, Deputy Chief Information Officer in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. With all of this information coming in, and it's a multiplicity of possible threats from basically all over the world, all over the internet, what is the process by which the intelligence community decides what are the higher risks? How do you prioritize this data that's coming in to know what you need to do right now?
Sure. So there's a couple of pieces to that. So we have the Security Coordination Center, but each of the IC agencies also has a security center or a cyber center or a CISO, which also does provides reporting, such as annual reports and assessments, testing. They provide the authorization for systems to operate on the environment. So there's a multiple step process with that. I would say that the Security Coordination Center is looking at the ongoing active threats and mitigations, malware, that type of thing that's going on. But then there's also other processes to ensure the readiness from an overall perspective. Each agency is charged with looking at what would be most vulnerable and how to protect their assets. And so that's an ongoing process that each of the agencies have. So it's a two-piece process. When you look at what is most vulnerable or your highest risk, it could vary depending on the agency, their mission, their data, how they perform that mission, and what they're charged with.
And just as an aside, is the intelligence community as concerned about phishing as everybody else is? Because I would think that the people in the intelligence community might have a heightened sense of awareness of the phishing threat.
Absolutely. So similar to the rest of the world, we're concerned with the same amount of threats, if not more, because of the importance and the significance of the data that we're trying to protect. So something as simple as phishing is as a threat within the IC as it is within the external world.
And the sharing of vulnerability information and possible high-risk types of activities on the internet or anything connected with the networks, how does it get shared? Is it just simply machine-to-machine transfer with alerts lighting up, or do people also pick up the phone and say, hey, you know what, I'm seeing XYZ?
I would say all of the above, because we would rather have more information than not enough. We operate in a hybrid and diverse environment because of our mission, our data, and what each of the unique agencies brings to the table. So it's not, we wouldn't want to limit that information sharing. So yes, we are looking at automating as much as possible, leveraging the cloud to set up a collaboration platform, if you would. We have a repository in the collaboration platform that actually the SEC leverages to disseminate information. It's called ICOS. But it's not to prevent someone from an old-fashioned phone call.
And so is the threat information sharing part of the greater collaboration network that the IC has been working on for many years?
Yes, I would say that now more so with the increase in data and the cyber threats and the propagation of malware, the commoditization of malware, that it's become more of a higher priority, because whereas before you could say threats were primarily performed by nation state actors, now with the commoditization, it's much more easier for anyone to provide or to obtain a exploit or a malware or something to disrupt the network.
Because in the sharing area, you also share intelligence gathering related information, human intelligence, signal intelligence done not so much for cybersecurity, but for the actual gathering of intelligence that the nation depends on. So does all of this collaboration happen on the same basic fabric, or does the threat intelligence for cyber kind of have its own virtual area?
No, it's shared on the same domain or fabric or classification level. Those domains or those environments can be used to share threat intelligence information or to perform the primary mission that the agency is charged with. So it's the same environment. Just as we use or have analysts to provide, say, an intelligence mission, we also have cybersecurity analysts. So that allows for development and cross-development of information.
I imagine sometimes the cyber threat information might relate to other issues, as you say, related directly to the mission of the intelligence community.
Absolutely.
Because they would, you know, if somebody wanted to do harm to the United States, they might start with a cyber attack, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. So you could say correlations, signatures, the data is audited and reviewed to look at, you could say, that cross-pollination between those efforts.
Linnea Jones is Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Intelligence Community. In Part 2, Jones discusses some of the emerging challenges to intelligence sharing. I'm Tom Temin.
Anomaly are the experts in threat detection and intelligence. Organizations rely on the Anomaly Threat Platform to detect threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Let the experts at Anomaly arm your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence and show you the hidden threats targeting your environment. Get started with expert insights from Anomaly. Subscribe to the weekly threat briefing and stay updated on the latest threats. Register free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.
Since the launch of comprehensive data sharing more than a decade ago, the intelligence community hasn't stopped refining its techniques and technologies. In the second part of my interview with Linnea Jones, the IC Deputy Chief Information Officer, she describes some of the emerging challenges to cyber threat information sharing in particular and data sharing in general.
Talking about some of the challenges that we face, I would say one would be the multi-fabric aspect. So we're operating on multiple domains, and with the increase of data and the increase of information in general, it poses a challenge of ensuring that we can get information to the right domain, right fabric, in the shortest amount of time possible. So because the expanse of exploits is normally more so on the unclassed fabric, it's ensuring that we can propagate that information to all domains in a timely manner. And unfortunately, technology, and I just say fortunately because it is a good thing, evolves so rapidly and so quickly that there's always a new update or always a new exploit or a new threat that is needed to be propagated up.
It sounds like you need your own program of continuous diagnostics and mitigation and also continuous monitoring to make sure that your tools and software environment is itself up to date with the latest patches and so on that the vendors are coming out with.
Absolutely. So continuous monitoring, automation, you know, leveraging newer technologies is absolutely the direction that we're moving towards because of those challenges, as well as the partnerships that we have with vendors and other service providers that we are depending on.
Now, everybody has Microsoft somewhere in their environment, and of course, Microsoft is very good about sharing its patches, and everyone has those. But we've talked about in the past a lot of the open source components that are being used in the intelligence community, including for this purpose of cyber intelligence. And you've expressed the difficulty that you have in making sure that the open source products are up to date because you don't have that direct vendor relationship necessarily.
Agree. I would think that the ongoing, not just for the intelligence community, but I think that's for anyone that uses open source technology writ large. So when you look at the use of open source, we are using open source, as is I'm sure everyone else is at some point or has in the past, and we're looking at how to secure that from a IC perspective. And there's also, in some cases, it could be open source meshed with other commercial technologies to provide perhaps the security enhancements that we need, even if it's custom security enhancements that are overlaid on the open source technology in order to provide that needed closure.
So you might not get your open source tools, say, from GitHub, but you would get them from some value-added supplier that can do that work for you. It would take up analyst time otherwise.
I would think that it depends on the case and scenario. I think that because the IC is so large, it depends on what we're using the tools for, how we need to have them secured. So I don't want to rule out like we're using one over the other. It really just depends on a case-by-case basis as to what we would need the tool to do or what area or gap we're trying to close.
And what is the role of contractors in the coordination center and in the other different centers that all collaborate within the IC? Is this mostly contractor-operated facilities, mostly government employees? How does that mix come out?
Sure. So it varies, whether it be civilians, military, or contractors. The IC is made up of all flavors, if you would. So it varies as to whether it's a facility that has contractors, or military and civilian. In most cases, it's blended environments, including all three, specifically the Security Coordination Center. But there are specialized cases where it may be, you know, all government, all civilian. It just depends on that mission and what that organization or that area is charged to do.
And what are your plans for all of this, for cyber threat intelligence, and how can this all be enhanced in the years ahead?
So our plans are to continue on with the evolution of automation, leveraging AI, artificial intelligence, machine learning. We want to be able to leverage tools and capabilities to be able to do some of the work for us, if you would, just because of the sheer volume of data and information. Also leveraging our relationships with our vendors and our partners to be able to leverage commercial technologies where applicable, and perhaps even leveraging GOT solutions for the more unique cases, or leveraging, say, open source with maybe government overlays. So I think in the future, as we go on, because of the amount of data and the commoditization of malware and exploits, it's upon us that we have to look at how we're doing business and see about using newer techniques and leveraging that newer technology to stay ahead of the curve.
Linnea Jones is Deputy Chief Information Officer for the Intelligence Community. I'm Tom Temin.
Know your adversaries with Anomaly. Anomaly arms your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence, giving you visibility into hidden attacks targeting your network. Organizations rely on the Anomaly threat platform to detect cyber threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Knowledge is power. Stay up to date on the latest emerging threats with the Anomaly Weekly Threat Briefing. Subscribe free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.
We're speaking with Linnea Jones, Deputy Chief Information Officer in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. It seems like almost every week there's another company coming into this field with another capability. How does one get to be even considered as a vendor in the intelligence community? My understanding is it ain't easy.
Well, there's a process. We have partner engagement organizations, and because the IC is so large, there are some vendors that have relationships with some of the individual agencies, and perhaps they are using their technology for specific cases. But we do have a partner engagement organization, community engagement, if you would, and there are means and methods to go through that to be considered as a potential partner for some of the larger capabilities and technologies, for larger vendors, if you would. There are a lot of existing relationships that, in some cases, they may be expanded upon as those companies, vendors provide new capabilities. But there are means to go through that. And I would say that we're always looking at what's on the horizon and looking for ways to integrate new technology that might be applicable to the intelligence community, or ways that we could better posture to support the nation and to make the environment as secure as possible.
And we've been talking about vendors as people, you know, selling something to the government, but also many of the large vendors, large operating companies that are outside of the government have their own threat intelligence, because
Absolutely.
They have a lot of intellectual property at risk and security at risk throughout the world. Are those part of this in some peripheral or even more direct way?
Absolutely. And in some cases, those could be our service providers that we have partnerships with for commodity service or managed services. So absolutely, in those cases, they're providing or receiving their threat intelligence and sharing it with the government because there's a vested interest in ensuring that we're secure on both angles. Another area that I didn't mention that I don't want to leave out is also our academia engagement. We are partnered with a lot of institutions to look at programs to help shape the foundation of like classes and instruction and teaching, as well as inviting them to some of our training and exercises to be a part of that. So.
And what about other nations? Clearly, I'm guessing you don't do a lot of information sharing with, say, China or Iran or something. But what about England and France and nations that we fully trust? Is there an international threat sharing component in the intelligence community?
So I would say that would go to the policy and sharing agreements that the U.S. has set up writ large. It all depends on those relationships, but that's not something that we're directly involved in. That's more of the policy, strategy, engagement.
That's down the hall, I guess. And some of that falls into the law enforcement area, too, which is outside of IC. And relative to, say, a year ago or 2 years ago, do you feel safer when you think about your networks?
I do, yes. I think it's ongoing, and it's not just me, but it's an ongoing challenge that we're continuing to go on. But the more we do, the better we become. And so the more insight that we gain, the more understanding that we gain, the stronger we become.
And does the iSight collaboration platform that has become a staple in the IC, is that falling under your shop?
Absolutely. And to highlight with that, we are now in EPIC 2 of iSight, or the IC Information Environment, the ICIE. And so with EPIC 2, it was a shift from where in the beginning when we first started, we were setting up a lot of foundational services such as cloud, information sharing. That's actually how the Security Coordination Center came about in that first EPIC, if you would. With EPIC 2, it's looking at it as a federated hybrid environment. So that's with the EPIC 2 of iSight. We're focused on reference architectures, how we're working across multiple fabrics, the multi-fabric aspect, as we mentioned before, say the cross-domain pieces. We're looking at how to leverage data where it lives and more of the lower classifications, if you would. And probably one of the biggest are the reference architecture, the collaboration reference architecture, CRA, as well as we're working on the data services reference architecture and the ICAM, identity credentials and access management reference architectures, which provide a framework or boundaries for us to be interoperable and create solutions for common problems.
Linnea Jones is Deputy Chief Information Officer for the intelligence community. There's much more to the interview. Hear it in its entirety at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for February, sponsored by Anomaly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Know your adversaries with Anomaly. Anomaly arms your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence, giving you visibility into hidden attacks targeting your network. Organizations rely on the Anomaly threat platform to detect cyber threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Knowledge is power. Stay up to date on the latest emerging threats with the Anomaly Weekly Threat Briefing. Subscribe free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened. Anomaly are the experts in threat detection and intelligence. Organizations rely on the Anomaly Threat Platform to detect threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Let the experts at Anomaly arm your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence and show you the hidden threats targeting your environment. Get started with expert insights from Anomaly. Subscribe to the weekly threat briefing and stay updated on the latest threats. Register free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.